Hello, this is the Paramount podcast. We'll be talking about apples and space, which of course links, actually. Apples and space do link. Even as that came out, I suddenly realised we may well be talking about some elements of Isaac Newton, though we won't be going in depth. And though I'm looking at Chris Addison, who's one of our guests.
Hello.
Well, he's the only guest, really, because joined, as I was last time, by Josie Long.
Hello, listeners.
As always, she waits until all the microphones are switched on and ready, and then says, now is the time to eat fruit.
This time it's fruit. Last time it was sweets. That's the beginning of all the changes in me that you will hear that have happened since the last ones that we did.
Chris Addison, who you may know from The Thick of It, I suppose.
Not really. Nobody does watch The Thick of It, of course.
I know, but it's one of those things. It's got critical kudos and you probably don't get paid very much for it, do you?
That's right.
Which is much better than actually living in a beautiful house but using the wallpaper to dry your tears.
I've had it monogrammed. I've got monogrammed velvet wallpaper.
I heard you had a matching eyepiece. Look specific.
I saw a man in a monocle. The other day.
That's wonderful.
But he wasn't.
What did he look apart from that? Was he just a normal man, but he was wearing a monocle, or was he like a Victorian?
No. He was a normal man who, and the monocle was on a bit of twine, so he wasn't kind of. It wasn't like an affectation or anything. He genuinely thought to himself, "Now then, this eye seems to work perfectly reasonably, but this eye's a bit dicky. Maybe he. I don't know. Maybe he likes to burn ants."
Last year, I met David Bowie. And I knew I was going to meet him. Yeah, the David Bowie.
Right.
And I was so worried that the night before I had a dream, not scared about meeting because he was David Bowie or anything like that. I love what he does and everything. And I knew it would just be, and it wasn't a signing session or anything. I'd be meeting him at backstage area. But I was so worried that his face would actually be decrepit in real life. You know, sometimes you meet people, you've seen them on television and they look fantastic. And then you see them in real life and they can't walk properly and their knees are all buckled and they're kind of, their face is sallow and dribbly. So
and
I'd imagine that I would.
That's a specific example of a musician that I met that I didn't want to meet, but he didn't have teeth anymore.
Who's that?
I don't want to say.
Now, was this when you met Chet Baker in a dream? Because that... No, but I genuinely had this dream the night before, which I woke up startled and wide-eyed, where it was Bowie turned round, and it was like, ah! And he was all like, a bit like the end of The Hunger. His whole face was falling apart. But as it was, I met him, and he looks quite good. So, fortunately, my dreams on that occasion didn't come true. But that doesn't necessarily mean that my career as a soothsayer should be entirely written off. I was going to ask you about. Yeah. I had a small part in your sitcom, which you've done, Lab Rats.
That's right.
Which was the most fantastic occasion of genuine, proper Buster Keaton slapstick. Not in terms of how adept it was, its technical brilliance, but in terms of everyone waking up the next day covered in bruises and worrying that they'd actually broken their neck.
What happened basically was that Robin played the part of a man in a cryogenic pod, and the stuff that they use for dry ice. Josie, you seriously covering? No, it's not. Whether you're listening or not, but covering the apple with one hand is not going to cause them.
Well, no, but you see, this is what Josie hasn't realised.
I'm not going to eat anymore.
When she eats sweets, she used to be able to cover it with one hand because it was butterscotch. She therefore still sees the apple as a sweet.
I'm sorry, I'm an idiot.
It's okay.
I heard that there was a lot of slapstick.
Yes, funny you should mention it, Josie. Well, Robin, this dry ice that we had nobody really knows what happened, but it was slippy the next week. The studio floor became incredibly slippy from this dry ice combined with whatever it was the cleaners were using, and everybody basically falling over on their arse. I think you went first.
Well, I had my first moment was I was standing in this excellent BBC prop of a cryogenic freezer, and it hadn't had the false bags of peas that were meant to be in there used in any of the run-throughs, and by any of the run-throughs I mean the one brief run-through where we never quite got to the end of the show. I was standing there and I'm meant to still be frozen, and Chris and Joe Emright and other are all meant to be just staring at me, and I'm meant to be stock still. And I stayed stock still for a while, and then I thought, my feet are on fire. I still thought, well, don't spoil a shock, because if I was working in Elstree in the 1950s, I'd think, well, my feet are on fire, but I'm very lucky to be working, to be quite honest. But eventually the feet really felt quite painful, you know, blistery painful. And so at that point I did say, I'm terribly sorry, can I get out? I think the thing's about to catch fire, which was quite an exciting moment, because then everyone just charged in. I was allowed to step out, and they did put their hands down and went, oh, yes, I don't know how it's happened. Sometimes this happens with the air. Pockets get in, and because it was just big bags of air mixing with the dry ice, it was actually not me just psychosomatically having a kind of Edgar Allan Poe premature burial moment. And also, I was wearing purple leggings. So I was this enormous, I was padded up. So I was basically, it was like a special obese version of Metamorphosis, really, wasn't it? That there I was, one day Robin Ince woke up to discover that he had turned into an obese man with a perm who had an inability to stand up straight.
That perm, by the way, was Rory Bremner's wig that he wears when he's playing the Queen.
Oh, was it? I didn't know that. Yeah. So we tried a few wigs. Yeah. And
how did you get that? Did you specially request it?
Yeah, you can put in a request.
We to Facebook, Rory Bremner and the Queen. You have to ask both of them specifically.
They have joint
and sometimes
copyright.
The Queen okays, but Bremner doesn't, and that is...
Well, she keeps less of an eye on her Facebook than Rory Bremner does. She's not got a lot else to do between series.
She's got less status updates.
She has, yes, one is...
Sitting for portrait, lol.
I had a thing, because I was thinking about you last night, Chris, because I knew we were going to meet up to this, and Josie as well. This is true. We all, in the last few years, got into science a great deal, and you did one show which was based partly around Jacob Bronowski's The Ascent of Man.
Yes.
And I've ended up in this situation where, for some reason, the last few shows that I've done, I talked about Carl Sagan, who I'm a big fan of, and Richard Feynman, and Jacob Bronowski as well.
I'd like it a little bit Feynman's more if great. They were more slangy. Like saying these beautiful erudite things, but then saying use. Like, use a better find out something about the universe.
Oh, but no, Richard Feynman does. Richard Feynman is one. I've been reading a bit of Carl Sagan's Pale Blue Dot today, where he goes, "If you plopped me anywhere in the universe, plop is great." And Richard Feynman at the beginning of Pleasure of Finding Things Out, he has that bit where he goes, "I have a friend, and he says something that I don't agree with too well." And when you see a he says he's an artist, and when he sees a flower, he says, "I see the beauty of the flower." And when you see the flower, you're a scientist. You pick it apart, and it becomes a dull thing. And I think that's kind of nutty. And I just think again, it's kind of nutty. And here's Richard Feynman is, in fact, what I want to do with these podcasts is just get a few people who can get into, because Feynman, there's something on the internet of him playing the bongos, because he played the bongos, he was a safecracker. If he had a choice between a fabulous hotel NASA wanted to put him up in, or one that was mainly used by prostitutes, he would go to that. Not to use the prostitute, but just because he would see more interesting things. I would see an enormous fat man who the prostitute was trying to push up the stairs.
Not so much for this, but I was thinking about how Kurt Vonnegut, because his parents were very much in like an engineering school, he went and did science at university, and so all for his life had this really healthy respect for science and for maths, and approached his writing from that angle, and so it's sort of science fiction but without being tedious or bad. It's wonderful, and he's got so much of his work is about nature and about thinking about things scientifically, but seeing that as beautiful and poetic and full and interesting.
The problem with science is that you don't have is the joyousness.
That's what Feynman, right? Going back to this thing, he speaks like mid-20th century New York Americans speak. He writes like that, which is tremendously entertaining. His fantastic autobiography, Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, that's a good place to start. Don't read the physics stuff. Start with that one and then go on to The Pleasure of Finding Things Out. But it's just full of the jokes and quirks and tricks and his understanding of humankind. And it's really, really entertaining, funny autobiography.
But I would start before that. Find the clip on the internet of him, probably not long before he died, I mean certainly his late 60s, playing the bongos, singing a song about orange juice. I don't know if you've ever seen this. It's just you never really see that many Nobel Prize winning physicists and he's just going, orange juice, go, give me orange juice, and he smile at the end, his beatific smile. And he was also a tip-top bongo player. Other scientists would think, do you know what, I'm a Nobel Prize winning scientist, they'll let me sit in with the band, whatever. They'll go, we've got the Nobel Prize, and the band would be there going, disappointing bongo playing, but what are we going to say, he's got a Nobel Prize. Whereas his bongo playing was exceptional. He could do 10 beats with one hand and 11 with the other, which
ladies
even in the bongo playing world is considered exceptional. Josie, you brought something in.
Well, I just brought this because I thought it might be funny. I've got this book, The Pocket Book of Quotations, just got for like 10p.
I've got a book of pocket quotations, which is a lot smaller.
Nothing about pockets. A pocket is a place to carry a thing.
Oh, the end.
Where did you get that one from? Which charity shop?
Or
was it a seaside stall?
It might have been a seaside stall. It was like 10p. And the thing about it is as a book of quotations, it is absolutely useless, because at best they're a bit irrelevant, and at worst they're themed around subject, but basically what they are is someone has picked out very obscure, pointless things that happen to have the word in it. So you have a quote about, say, jealousy, and instead of a quote saying jealousy is the man's monster, and you go, "Oh, very interesting." It says,
"Beware
like,
the meat that mocks." What's it? What's that? Beware the green-eyed monster that mocks the meat it feeds off.
Exactly. Whereas this one,
the voice I always do for Shakespeare, doesn't matter what it is.
Whereas this one is like, there was a woman and she bought herself a horse and named that horse Jealousy.
Right, going, well, let's find out then, Josie.
You're going to reveal.
Jealousy. While you're looking at the book, can you just tell us what the ISBN is as well, just in case someone's interested? I don't know if it's out of print.
0/671/60386/8.
Right, brilliant.
I love any of the 607.
So you haven't done as much research as we'd imagine, Josie. When it's full of, and then now we've actually just got you reading the book silently in your head.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that sometimes people. But what I thought.
Your brain is not mic'd.
Do you want to know what I thought?
Yeah,
see how. God, who have I become? Do you want to know who I. Yes, I will look up apples. What I thought about this was there's not even a quote for apples, so that's how comprehensive it is.
Probably just generic fruit selection of quotes.
What I do is over the course of the podcast, I would look up relevant quotes and then be able to quote things that were unhelpful. Okay, the art ones are a little bit about art, which is not that helpful.
This turns out that Josie bought a book with the hope that it was rubbish, and actually,
no,
actually it's rather good.
Ever since I've had this, I've
who's
thought,
this bloke? Tennyson? He sounds
now
like a right tit. No, he's quite well known, Josie. Was he stupid, beardy idiot?
Just no, this is for me to be doing this while you're.
Oh, fine.
It's not always going to be books that we bring in, but I brought Murmurs of Earth, which is a fantastic book. It's all about how they put together the record that's on Voyager, basically, which is as in the pictures. That
there's a metal plate, isn't there?
There's a metal plate which has a picture of a man and a lady. The man, he has genitals. The woman, not, for it to be dirty.
Isn't there our position in the solar system?
Yeah, it's got the position in the solar system, and then an attempt to show scale is on it as well. So
that
you get some sense. Obviously, the man has his arm up in the as much as they can, the universal greeting of "Hello, I'm not armed."
Right,
and then it's got.
They've looked at a lot of science fiction films, and they've worked out that that's the most used gesture amongst fictional alien races.
Oh, they put a lot of effort in.
That's the best one to go for.
No, they had huge debates, and they've got fantastic.
Huge debates isn't the same as putting a lot of effort in.
Oh no, they did put a lot of effort in.
Oh, fine.
No, there really is, because they wanted to put the image that I've got here. That while Joe's looking for a quote, the one image they wouldn't put in was there's a picture of a nude man and a nude lady.
Right.
And the lady's a bit pregnant, and they're not. It's not like they're. There's nothing rude about it.
No.
It's just nude. I mean, there's nothing. Anyway,
they're standing next to each other, holding hands, aren't they?
And NASA, yeah, and NASA wouldn't, and she's pregnant, and NASA wouldn't allow that on because they said it was too. Basically, their thing was the idea of sending through space something that's a bit rude, and that the aliens would eventually find it and go, "Whoa, planet sex, let's go there." And then when they'd arrive, the four-star general who'd had nightmares for years on end, going, "When the aliens arrive, probably he was just like a corporal when he first started having these dreams. 30 years later, the space, and he just imagines the space going, "Hello, we are the aliens. Now, four-star general, pop them off. We're ready to do you."
If you put the effort into building a craft and locating a place, you would perhaps, I think, continue on your journey and eventually reach the object of your search. So what you'll end up with, though, is a lot of aliens who've learnt how to communicate, basically through radio phone-ins being blasted into the universe. So they will come here having assimilated our language, saying, "Well, the thing that you have to understand is that at the end of the day, we come in peace." Essentially, that's what it's going to be. And they, at the end of, if they disagree with something you're saying, I'm cutting you off. And they won't understand when you continue to talk to them. "No, I can't cut you." That's not.
I'd like it if they just said, "Sit down, you don't know me. Sit down, you don't know me."
You ain't the boss of me. So have you found any quotes from your book
yet?
Well,
I found the quote which proves that
because you've bigged up this book. This book's rubbish. And it turns out you're nearly at the last page before you found a rubbish quote.
It's in alphabetical order. It's basically, you want a quotation book to be elucidating and poetic. You want to read it and go like, "Oh, yes, that is the nature of virtue," right? So villain, right? This is a quote about villains, and you would expect that to express the nature of what a villain is. The quote is, "Oh, villain, villain, smiling, damned villain." Well, I suppose that's a little bit, but still, you know.
It's very villainy. I mean, if you want, when I want a quote, what I want is to make sure I can find a quote which has the title in it as much as possible.
I think you seem
apple-y, 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 apple. Oh, apple, apple of your eye, apple-y. This is a very apple-y quote.
You seem to have mixed up books of quotations with, thought for the day calendars.
Or indeed a dictionary.
Yeah. Even they're not entirely in alphabetical order. Once you get beyond the words in bold, the whole system falls apart. Apple, a kind of fruit, A-K-O-F.
Deluge. After us, the deluge. just says the word. But maybe I'm just being an idiot.
Isn't that a track from Regina Spektor's album?
Oh, yeah.
It is, in fact.
It's Madame de Pompadour. I suppose after they got killed, then that would be... Okay, I suppose. Maybe I am just an idiot.
So what you've revealed, Josie, is a rubbish book that turns out is actually better than you. What have you brought, Chris?
I really couldn't think of what to bring. And then this morning I noticed on the piano the 2008 Knitting with Desiree Scales and Friends calendar. It's a pattern a day. For knitting, and my father gave this to my wife for Christmas.
Every day a pattern already. What's
your
he
dad
to do
gave
to her?
My dad gave this. My wife knits. Right, she likes to knit. She enjoys knitting.
Knitting's cool.
Yeah, and apparently it's what the cool kids do
it's
now.
What hipsters do.
Yeah, yeah, and which you know, but far from it being a passing fad in our house, my wife does like to knit. But so he gave her this thing, which includes the most astonishing patterns of. Tortuga hat, anybody? This is how to knit yourself a hat that looks like a tortoise. You could have it look a woolen tortoise on your head.
A lady
Josie.
Came up to one, me after a gig and gave me this hat that is a horse's head that you put over your own head, and it's really cool. And she said to me, oh, this is really great because it's the closest you can be to being a horse and wearing a horse.
My friend Carl, who I wrote the Lab Rats with, his gran knits little toys for children, you know, rabbits. And in fact, she knitted three rats that we've got on the set of the show. It's really lovely. She knitted stuff for my little boy. And Carl said he went round there the other day and he noticed that all of the cushions on the settee are all flat. And she's just been knitting these things and then nicking the stuffing out of her own cushions. So she's now got a settee that's entirely bare, but for some bits of sort of flabby.
It's a nice
fabric.
Cover. I'm not going to get rid of the cushion cover.
But her windowsills are covered in, you know, little knitted gonks.
What's your favourite museum of taxidermy? Or a museum which has some taxidermy within it. They normally call them natural history museums rather than calling them museums of taxidermy.
Yeah, they do. They're funny like that. Well, I'm a big fan of the Natural History Museum in our own London.
Mm. I like the New York.
Although there's the, yeah, which is great, but I don't live there. See, but there's also the Horniman Museum in southeast.
I want to see a walrus, but I live in Forest Hill. No problem.
Do you know the story about the walrus? The walrus in the Horniman Museum, right? The Horniman Museum is Forest Hill, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Mm.
So Dulwich, that kind of area in London, and there's a big. I mean, really big walrus. And when it was sent by Victorian scientists, trappers, whatever.
Someone stole it.
It was sent to the museum, and they said, there you go, there's a walrus. Stuff.
Enjoy yourselves.
Yeah, knock yourselves out, kids, right? So what the people who were involved in sort of reconstituting this walrus so that it looked like a walrus had never seen one of its species before. So they weren't aware that walruses have kind of folds and folds of flab and flesh. So they just kept stuffing and stuffing this walrus. So the one that you see in the Horniman Museum has almost no folds in it, but it's just the biggest balloon of a walrus you've ever seen in your life. And you'll note that also in the Horniman Museum, all of the cushions are flat.
Josie, you had a point to make.
Well, there were two things. Firstly, if you do go to the Horniman, there's a wonderful puffer fish as an example of bad taxidermy. Its eyes are not right, and the expression on its face is chilling. It is not what it is supposed to look like, and it's sort of this round, spiky puffer fish. And go and look at it.
What does the expression say to you then? This
surprise and contempt, which would seem right, but
well, puffer fish generally do look like they're going. Which is, you know, the little they're shaking their head at you.
And they are meant to be horrifying. I mean, I think that's why they've got that particular ability to puff up and be all spiky, was to be horrifying. I always think a badly stuffed cat is the best thing. I know it's very sad, but when there used to be anecdotes, I think in the late 80s, it was a spate of news stories. I think there'd been all manner of botched taxidermy that was going on and people who were illegally working as taxidermists.
Underground, yeah.
And there was the
backstreet taxidermy.
There was a lot of backstreet taxidermy. I mean, generally, that's where it is anyway. It's never really a front of the beautiful big glass window.
That is
see
true.
Someone pulling the guts out of a polar bear. But there was this fantastic, this woman who spent a huge amount of money having her beloved cat stuffed, and it had made a boss-eyed cat. And it must be quite hard to make a boss-eyed cat because of the way their eyes are. How do you? But it was just the tragedy of to have a boss-eyed cat
boss-eyed
as a paperweight.
A boss-eyed fish would be harder as a paperweight. The tragedy of having your old cat as a paperweight. I imagine boss-eyed doesn't seem so, but I imagine that you meant, you know, they couldn't get one leg down. You know, there's one leg stuck up like an awkward piece of hair.
Like it's indicating.
I just can't get you. Yeah, turning left.
Hmm.
I like the fact that the Tring Natural History Museum has dressed fleas, which are still quite the thing.
Dressed fleas?
Yeah, they've shown that using special tiny, weeny hat and cloak design, they have dressed, it apparently looks like both fleas are fully dressed.
That's a difficult industry to work in.
Like a miniature Swiss clock.
That's not a museum, though, is it? That's not a museum. A museum demonstrates things to you that exist.
No, but also
that demonstrates a lot to me.
Yeah, it demonstrates something about, but not the actual tangible thing that's in front of you. It demonstrates
something
about
the They found those fleas. They didn't dress those fleas.
Look at these fleas.
Yeah, but say, you
know, Tring's fleas are more sophisticated than fleas in any other part of the country, or possibly just more embarrassed or more prudish.
Yeah, they're prudish.
Tring has prudish fleas.
Those are
the
fleas that they send pictures of into space.
You see, Tring is a place you can find the glitch. The Gliss-Gliss, one of the only places in the UK to find the Gliss-Gliss, or the edible dormouse.
What
which is a dormouse that regrets its naming, because it unfortunately always incites people to consume it. But yeah, the Gliss-Gliss is a small edible dormouse. Also have wallabies that have escaped from the zoo. It's a magical place, Tring. Josie, have we got any more quotes from you there?
Do you know anything about Tring?
A highbrow is a person educated beyond his intelligence.
But that doesn't work at all. That's a terrible quote. Who said that?
Brander Matthews, that famous scribe.
See, that's what you've missed out, is, you know, normally, again, they are things, they're quotes from Byron, they're quotes from Shelley, maybe even Iris Murdoch's in there, perhaps Juvenal.
Exactly.
You've got Brander Matthews and possibly the woman who wrote that Superpower Me.
Adelaide
in one of those
A.
kind of
Proctor.
Self-help books.
I just... Now, listen, this book will help you to select an appropriate quotation on almost any subject, which is not true. Discover the title of a book from which a quotation is taken. Yeah, if you have these ridiculous, obscure books that nobody has because they're not any good, find the author's name when you already know the words of a quotation. Learn when the author was born and when he died.
Anne Coulter, you know, you mentioned her. Mm. If there was a prequel to The Stepford Wives, in which they made some botched Stepford Wives, man, keep that one in a box in the garage, this one is screwed. That's what Anne Coulter's the kind of... Well, she's not even the mouthpiece of Fox News anymore, because even Fox go, she's a little bit crazy. She's kind of a very...
She looks like they just saved Barbie from the fire.
I actually get this great thing that, you know, when you sign up for certain mailing lists, that you appear to get emails from... Like, I get emails from Anne Coulter. Of course, it's
what?
Not. It's
Why?
Just. But it looks like every time... I've never got used to it. Every time I open my account and I go, email from Anne Coulter. And I go, oh, no, it's an email saying, hi, I'm Anne Coulter. Liberals are rubbish. I've got a new book out, which is called Liberals are Rubbish. And it's full of rubbishy things that liberals have done. Rubbish. And I get them from Newt Gingrich as well. It appears that I do. But, of course, once you go beyond just their name, you go, oh, it's just another offer on a book. But for a moment, I think I'm kind of email pals with Anne Coulter. And we don't get on.
Hi, Robin. How's the baby? P.S. I hate everything you stand for. Bye.
Please do not fill the baby with liberal ideas.
Why have you signed up for these things?
Because I'm always fascinated I'm fascinated for about 2 days and then I get a bit bored. So the Family Research Council, who do a lot of research into families, and what they discover is a family that does not love God will die horribly.
Right.
So proper loving God as well, which includes the homophobia. Because that is, as Melanie Phillips said not that long ago, one of the central tenets of the Bible is against homosexuality. I go, I'm certain
it's
actually
not a
that's
central tenet.
It's not.
It?
It's not one of the main ones, is it? I've had a look. I mean, Jesus forgot to mention it.
I used to do graffiti quite a lot on the London Underground.
You.
I used to do speech bubbles coming out of people's mouths, saying things like, it used to say, like, Jamie Cullen was my favourite. There was this, I just find him offensive. And so there's this picture of him with his face open, like, ugh! And I always used to have speech bubbles saying, I'm a massive twat, I'm a tool. And there was this one of you two, right? And there were you two sitting on a bench. And I did speech bubbles coming out of all their mouths. So it was like, Bono said, I'm a twat. The Edge said, I'm also a twat. And then I can't remember which one. And then I think Adam Clayton, I said, I too am also a twat. And then the other one I went, I am all right. And I thought that was really funny. And then Richard Herring saw it independently of me and wrote a little blog about how he liked it. And then I had to go, that was me, done it. And then it seemed a bit like I cared too much that he knew that I'd done it. sometimes it's important as well, because there are these adverts on the tube at the moment that I find more offensive than anything I've seen in years and
is
years.
Is that one that's above the door that's like a tangle of coloured lines with all place names?
And I'm like, I seven sisters.
Jesus. What is it? I know about London. I'm in London. You don't need to advertise London to me, you
idiot. Just replace it with a St George cross.
Yeah.
I've been going to the planetarium in Greenwich a bit because
which
I
ones
love
have you
it.
Seen so far?
Well, this is what I was going to go to. I saw The Birth of Stars, and then yesterday I saw Black Holes, right?
Right.
And The Birth of Stars I found wonderful and mind-blowing. And I think it's because it goes, you are here. Let me tell you about stars slowly, slowly, slowly. The Black Holes one is written for five-year-old boys. It goes, I'm Liam Neeson and welcome to a world of black holes. And then it's just like, could this be this? Not really. Could this be this? That's not really the science either. And you're like, this is boring. And the astronomers I found are a little bit prissy.
It is mainly for children, the planetarium.
No, the Star Nebulae one did not feel
I know, but the point is you can't really complain about it. It feels like it was written for 5 years. Yeah, that's who it's supposed to be inspiring.
Well,
you're already starry-eyed and going in with a sense of wonder. That's trying to make five-year-olds who'd rather be... What do five-year-olds do now?
Glue thumping.
Glue thumping and
MySpace.
Glue thumping and MySpace.
Good.
No,
shut up, Josie. We're doing another fucking show in an hour. You'll use everything up.
I'm sorry.
Right. Anyway. I sometimes have to come down pretty darn hard. Now, we'll be talking about the Science Museum, and some idiot columnist went, I went to the Science Museum. It's just for fathers who split up from the wives having to take their kids there. None of the things work at the Science Museum. Yeah, they do. I went there recently. All of them work. What you mean is you're too stupid to actually press the buttons which show where your genes might come from. Anyway, so we'll be talking about the Science Museum.
Well, that sounds lovely.
Time.
I'll certainly tune in.
And thank you very much, Josie Long. Thank you very much for bringing what turned out to not be a terrible book of quotations, but one that was vaguely disappointing. thank you very much. Bringing your knitting patterns, Chris. Could we end with a knitting pattern?
Let's
read out a little bit of a knitting pattern, so it'll give people some clues as to how they might be able to knit something.
Listen, if you want to make Gertrude the flamingo, then let me tell you that you're going to need Burnout Baby Boucle yarn, about 113 grams of that. The main colour is going to be prettiest pink, so you're going to want two balls if you can. Burnout Satin again, that's about 100 grams. And Contrast B and Contrast C, seashell and ebony, a ball each. Needles, you'll be wanting 3.75 millimetres. That's the US size 5 of course, and for everything else, just make sure you've got a pair of black animal eyes on you. Should be fine.
Thanks very much. Good luck with your flamingo. Thank you very much, Josie Long.
Thank you for having me.
And thank to Adrian and Helen for producing this show.